Do you know your net worth? Or can you even list all your financial accounts? Believe it or not, most people can't. The problem is simple. When you don't track your finances, you leave hard-earned money on the table by overspending and undersaving. Monarch is the solution, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, you can link all your accounts to see a clear, complete picture of your financial health. With data visualizations and AI-driven insights, Monarch helps you spot patterns, cut wasteful spending, and make better financial decisions without ever touching a spreadsheet. Monarch more than pays for itself. In fact, users save over $200 a month on average. That's why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch the best budgeting app of 2025. Get 50% off your first year when you use code TARGET at monarch.com. That's monarch.com, promo code TARGET. Monarch, the modern way to manage money.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 518, I'm welcoming back to the show my friend, Dr. Kelly Jamison.
When parents get involved, we also want a quick solution. And sometimes these things just have to work themselves out. We also have to remember that what is a very heated issue amongst girls 6 months later is a non-issue, but the parents are still hot about it. That's really hard too. So the parenting perspective there is how to let it go when it was a complete torpedo in your home. You can't recalibrate yourself to accept these girls anymore after the pain and damage that they caused inside of your house and to your child.
Dr. Jamison is a mom of three. She's a trained systems therapist and speaker based here in Dallas, Texas. Our teenage boys are in school together. She practices narrative therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy. Through the years of listening to many families and teens, she has learned how to navigate those difficult years of teen and tween friendships and how to help parents coach their kids. And so I thought she would be great to come on the show and help me with a hot topic, one I get a lot of questions about: mean girls, these teen friendships, and what's going on, and what is our role as moms? How do we help coach our kids through the conflict? There's so much goodness in this episode. Topics like friend hoarding. Have you heard of that before? What actually qualifies as mean girl behavior, in my own confession, and why it's all about the power dynamics. If you're a mom of a son, this episode is for you too, because we need to help coach our sons on how to manage the friendship drama. And how to kind of a caution for moms to not become more enmeshed in the friendships than we need to be, and three types of friendships every kid should understand. So much goodness in this episode. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Dr. Jamison, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
Well, thanks for having me back.
I mean, we have these little chats as friends on the side, and it would be rude of me not to share you with my listeners more. So thank you for saying yes and coming on the show and helping guide us in the mean girl chat, because the amount of moms who reach out to me, even today when I put that question box up for a different guest, two of the questions were about mean girls. And I was like, oh, I'm going to cover that in its own episode. So I have to confess, before I let you share all your wisdom, that I was a mean girl.
I can't believe that.
It's so sad. I was so mean. Kindergarten and first grade.
That's early mean girl behavior.
It's really early mean girl. To the point that in first grade, like another gal and I, who I'm still friends with, and she was just in town recently, she had a really cool purse and we let a girl hold it going down the slide, and that girl got it dirty and we kind of mocked her and made her clean it in the sink. And I vividly remember that moment. And then the teacher, like, it was a small Christian school, so we had to apologize, make it right, yada, yada. And then I got to homeschool the next 6 years.
Oh, my. Okay.
They're going to homeschool the mean girl right out of me. So the fact that you couldn't see me as one, it worked. It worked.
It worked, because I'm a friend of yours now, and I would not call you a mean mom whatsoever.
Okay. Phew. Phew. So tell us what qualifies a mean girl? You work with kids, teens, families?
Yeah. Well, this topic is so trendy right now. Mm. I mean, I posted something about doing this presentation to a group around here, and the DMs from literally everywhere were like, will you come to our school and do it? Will you come to our group and do it? And this is a huge problem in our area. And the news called and they wanted a segment on it. It's just like, this touches every family. And I think it's so hurtful because the children get hurt and then the parents get involved and then it becomes this big family issue and siblings get involved. And there's something about this topic specifically that, gosh, it really just incites fury in people because it is so rude and unjust and just mean. But it's behavior from children.
Yeah,
that it just really lights people up. So the topic, people love the topic. They love talking about it, and everyone's been touched by it in some way. So to answer your question, what qualifies mean girl behavior is, you know, I've played around with so many definitions of this, but in my mind, it's really just a manipulation of power plays amongst children and adolescents. So, and you're going to hear a million different definitions on it, but at its core, it's just children and teenagers playing with power dynamics amongst their peers in a negative way.
And we had this when we were younger, yeah, but it's increased. And the gal who wrote, I'm going to forget her name, Queen Bees and Wannabes.
Rosalind Wiseman.
Rosalind Wiseman. And then they made the movie Mean Girls from it. Gave it some language. Like, yeah, I've experienced that. This is real. This is a real dynamic. But in clinical practice, was it something that they taught you how to deal with? Was this something discussed, these social dynamics? Or do you feel like it's not just trendy, it's just become even bigger?
Yes. No, they did not teach us about this. And yes, it has become even bigger for a few factors. Okay. So Rosalind Wiseman wrote the book. I mean, the book's old. It's like 20 years old. And then, yeah, Tina Fey came around, bought the rights to it, made the movie. And now, I mean, most people probably don't know this, but the two of them are in kind of a legal battle because Tina Fey refuses to pay Rosalind Wiseman because, you know, now it's been a second movie and it's a Broadway musical. So it is so ironic that Tina Fey herself has turned out to be like a mean girl in business to, yeah, the psychologist who did the research and gave language to this phenomenon.
Yeah, but Rosalind, was she the first one to do research on it and actually give it a name?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. And she's great. I mean, she's been here in Dallas. I've met her. A couple schools have brought her to speak. So she's still on the circuit talking about it, but she for sure changed the culture in which we think about teenage girls.
And hers was Queen Bees and Wannabes. And so let's talk through, what are those dynamics? What are those power plays, the roles and the group setting? And you said I was young. Like, what ages are we talking to?
Yeah. So, I mean, it can start as young as kindergarten, first grade. And those early power plays are the classic, you're not coming to my birthday party.
Oof.
Yes. You're not invited to my sleepover.
Oof.
You can't play Foursquare with us. And it's just, it's literally the same behavior, but it just magnifies over time, you know, as they get older. And then the power gets just a little bit different, but foundationally, it's all the same. And it's really just a function primarily of exclusion.
With a goal of what?
Exclusion and making people feel small and making yourself feel self-important. The trend right now in 2025 is very large friend groups. Some psychologists are calling this like friend hoarding, and big friend groups are big. I mean, we see it on social media. You see an event and there's like 50 kids lined up, 25 girls, 25 boys. So this whole idea of like the bigger the friend group, the more socially successful you are. And because of that, I think personally that that has upped the ante with this mean girl behavior, because it's all about status and belonging in these big friend groups, which is where these minions come into play too, because you have your classic queen bee. She decides to target a girl in the group who talked to the wrong person or hosted the wrong event in the eyes of the queen bee, let's say. And then she targets this other girl. But then you have, you know, 12, 15 other girls in the group who are bystanders who are not going to stand up for the girl who really did nothing wrong because they're so petrified of losing their place in these gigantic friend groups. It's so unjust because you've got the queen bee just kind of doing her bad behavior. But then you have all these bystanders watching who are allegedly friends of the girl that was targeted. So I think that's what makes this so hard right now is because these kids and these teenagers are just so dead set on keeping their sense of belonging and their place at the table of these big friend groups that they'll forfeit their own integrity to keep their spot.
Well, and I'm hearing that the impact of the fact that these groups are so big, because even in the movie, it was the three girls.
That's right.
Which is easier to disrupt than, like, it's not just three girls. This is like, guys, this is a massive group that you're saying you no longer are a part of, or you're kicked out if you don't keep the rules. So in that big of a group, there's truly just one queen bee, or is there like a group of three and they hold the power?
So there's groups within the group. Every teenager will tell you that. So let's say you have a group of 15 girls. There are dyads in each one. So they're known to be the best friends in the group and they're known to be the best friends in the group. So, but generally speaking, there is kind of one leader. So what we do in therapy when I get one of these girls who has been banished from the friend circle or she's been canceled, what we do is we work to talk about the other girls in the group and how to sort of recalibrate yourself. So what we'll do, and I use a lot of toys with this too, even with teenagers, is we kind of segregate out like who's who in the group. And I'll say, okay, who's the number kind of two in the group? And because she's the one that poses the most threat to number one, and number one knows it. And then I'm like, okay, who in the group has been consistently a good friend to you despite the fact that you've been canceled from the group? This is usually someone that she'll sit next to in a class who's nice to her in class when they're just chatting, but in the group, she doesn't talk to her or she's not, doesn't look at her, you know, things like that. So we work to identify those kids and then to foster those kind of one-off friends to remind that friend that the girl that's been canceled is still a quality friend. And then that helps to kind of rework the power in this infrastructure of these groups. So people listening might be like, oh my gosh, that seems like, you know, pretty complex thinking for a friend group. But in the lives of these teenagers, there's literally nothing more important than their peer groups. And it feels so immense and important to them that, yeah, we spend an hour at a time pulling apart their friend group and talking about each person in the group and what their relationship is to that person and how can they work on that to either kind of pull out a friend in the group or get back in the group or decide, like, I'm going to go try another group. And that's really what we do in therapy. That's what I do in therapy with these teenage girls who have been cut out from a group. It's like they don't know what to do. So it's a lot of strategizing about people reading and group dynamics and the psychology of it for them to feel good about what's happened, that they didn't do anything wrong, and to make sense of the hypocrisy that lies in these friend groups, and then what they should do about it.
So everyone knows that feeding a lot of teenage boys is costly, but what I don't hear a lot of people talking about is it's easy for me to fill them up with junk food, but I know it's not good for them. And then I find that they're staying home from school because they're not healthy, their gut's not healthy. And so I am super thankful that I can get them quality, healthy, filling snacks for cheaper because of Thrive Market. They are my go-to online grocery store because I don't have to leave my couch. They also remember what I've ordered in the past. My boys absolutely love the Chomps beef sticks, I swear. And they're full of protein. They're a healthy version because I know Thrive has already vetted everything on their site. There are so many food additives that are allowed in our food market, but Thrive says no, they have banned over 1,000 harmful ingredients. They spend hours doing the hard work of researching, so I don't have to. I know that anything on their site, I can trust. I love that I have a Healthy Swaps scanner through the app so I can scan something like Doritos and they will give me a healthier option that my kids will eat and I know is better for their bodies. They also have great filters. If I'm in a season, maybe you have a kid that needs to be peanut free, or we're in a season of gluten free, or we want some more some keto or high protein options, you just search on their website and you get so many great things. Primal Kitchen, Siete. It's a great time saver. And I also, you know, love a mission-driven brand. And with Thrive Market, they not only seek out the highest quality brands and follow ethical practices and strict quality standards, they accept SNAP EBT and they offer free memberships for low-income families through their Thrive Gives program. So if you're ready to make the switch, go to thrivemarket.com/DMA for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. That's THRIVE market.com/DMA, thrivemarket.com/DMA. Our family has been in love with the Chosen series since I think 2020, and we've been following along. I've fallen more in love with the show as I've gotten to know the creators, the producers, the writers, the actors, even gotten to visit the set where the show is filmed. And I cannot believe they're already on season 5. And what's really cool, this season is called The Chosen Last Supper, and all 8 episodes are being released in a 3-part theatrical release. That means you can go in theaters and you can see this special season. What makes it special is it covers the most pivotal week in history, Holy Week. It begins with the table being set, the people of Israel welcoming Jesus as king while his disciples anticipate his crowning. But instead of confronting Rome, Jesus turns the tables on the Jewish religious festival. With their power threatened, the country's religious and political leaders are going to go to any length to ensure this Passover meal is Jesus's last. You can get your tickets now at thechosenlastsupper.com. Text your favorite person, grab your family, get your box of movie theater candy, and go see The Chosen Last Supper in theaters. Get your tickets at thechosenlastsupper.com. I mean, super helpful that they have you. And my thought went to, these parents have gotten to the place where they're so desperate that they're bringing in a professional. And so that parent is listening right now, like feeling a little bit, maybe noticing a difference in their child. I mean, if they're even blessed enough to know that this is going on, do you find that? Like, what leads a parent to get to the point to seek professional help?
That's a great question. It varies. I had a mom who brought a daughter to me who had not done anything socially in one calendar year.
Like, hadn't gone out with a single person socially. Okay.
And she's like, we need help. Because the girl was just withdrawing and withdrawing and withdrawing. And she had not done anything socially. Sometimes it doesn't take that. Sometimes it's just a bad first semester. A lot of times I see an uptick after Halloween with the dreaded
Halloween, the worst.
The group costume. New Year's Eve, homecoming, prom, any sort of big events. Well, it depends. Middle school is more of Halloween is kind of the big social event for middle schoolers because they're out running around on their own. There is some status and hierarchy and what group you're in. Did you make it into the group costume? The whole group costume could be an entire podcast on its own. But for high school, it's more, you know, those big events, those parties, prom, homecoming, Sadie's, winter formal, football games, parties, things like that. So I see an uptick after those events where someone has just been crushed or lied to and they have this reveal when they show up to the party or they show up to the Halloween and they realize everyone's dressed as My Little Ponies and they didn't get the invite. And it's just crushing to them because it kind of unhinges their stability of what they know to be true amongst their peers and they can't make sense of it. And it crushes a parent. And that's generally when I get a phone call or an appointment for a girl who's in this situation. The people I don't hear from are the moms whose daughter is the mean girl or the ones who are wreaking havoc in the group and then playing dumb about it. I never get that one.
You think that they are playing dumb, or do you think, like, Do you think they truly, they don't know that their child is the one causing the pain? Like, my mom obviously picked up on it and homeschooled me. So watch out, girls. Your mom's listening to this episode. She's going to take you right out of school.
Yeah. Yes. Well, the problem is, I mean, not to further complicate things, but moms are getting so enmeshed in the social lives of their daughters that it sometimes...
And sons.
It's double... And sons. But it sometimes doubles down on the meanness and the manipulation. And that goes to a few different things. Mom, in and of herself, likes having the big parties and the great professional pictures and likes being the star. So she creates that in her daughter, or mom was not that as an adolescent or a child. So she's living through her daughter. Sometimes mom doesn't have enough of her own hobbies and interests going on. So she's getting her buckets filled through the social events of her children. And she oftentimes has the means to do so. So she blows it up and makes it gorgeous and beautiful and wonderful and leaves people out and just enjoys the attention and the status that her children get through those big events.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a good idea if you're the mom of the child being excluded to reach out to the mean girl's mom.
It's funny you say that, because when I do this presentation with groups, I have a couple slides about this. And I say, if you are a mother, yeah, and you get a phone call from another mother, mm-hmm, that your child has done something, I want you to know that it is absolute code red in their house, that it is level 10 crisis for a mom to pick up a phone and call another mom. So, and then I go through all these things not to say.
As the one calling or the one getting the call?
As the one receiving the call.
Okay.
Do not say things along the lines of, oh, it's just one night, or, you know, girls can be so emotional, or we need to let the kids just figure this out, or, you know, stupid things that moms say. So, and then I go through, I think there's about 10 of them on the list. And then if you are receiving this phone call, you should just simply say, thank you so much for the call. I'm going to go talk to my child and find out what's what. Don't say, I'll call you back. Don't make excuses. Just thank them for the call and tell them that you're going to talk to your child. That's all they want you to do. They want you to go talk to your child, right? And then as a mom, you sit your child down and you say, hey, what happened with this sleepover or this event? And then you stay very open-ended and curious. And then as a mother, you're going to know, in the way that your child narrates and summarizes that experience, you should be able to read your child enough to know if they did something that was really improper or rude to someone else. But never ask a mom to, like, meet you at Starbucks and talk about what happened. This 100% of the time goes badly. So you can pick up the phone call and express your concern about what happened and let them go talk to their child. But under no circumstances should you say, hey, could we meet in person and talk about this? Because what that other mom does is she goes and talks to her child. She gets her side of the story completely galvanized. And then she shows up to Starbucks and she's ready to kind of protect her child and her family and herself. So that literally never goes well. Your best bet, if it's that bad, is to pick up the phone and call and say, hi, you know, I'm so-and-so's mom. I just wanted to know if you were aware of this situation. My daughter really got her feelings hurt. I don't know if you know about this, but I wanted you to be aware. If I were a mom, I would want to know. And then that's it. You've done your part. You go help your child and she can sit her child down and figure out what's what.
Like, don't add to the drama.
Right.
Okay. I like that. That's very good advice. So how, you said it's code red in their house. Like, if you're getting a call, it's code red in their house. So it's always hard as a parent of teens to know, when is it my job to be the coach, to listen, if they're willing to even talk to you about it. Sometimes dynamics are happening and you have no idea. You just see them on Snapchat and you're like mad that they're constantly snapping and you have no concept. But let's say you do know something's going on. What is the role between coaching them to stand up for themselves and to navigate those friendships and to even do what you talked about? Who are the people that you feel are friends with you? Let's find time to be with them versus making that phone call Or like being extreme. I mean, I know this can get extreme and it's like, well, we're switching schools. We're switching schools mid-year. We're switching schools today. Like, this has happened. This is real.
And sometimes that is the right answer.
Yeah.
And that's what we do in therapy with parents too, is like, what have you tried? What has not worked? What are other options? And sometimes it is. If it's a small school and there's like 30 or 40 girls in the grade and your daughter has been canceled and the entire grade has subscribed to it and you're stuck with this child and there's no like going to high school and everyone's going to break up into different schools, sometimes that is the right answer. But my answer to your question is, when do you know when to coach them and when do you pick up the phone? A couple things. Number one, you have to know the personality of your child. Are they coachable enough? And because a lot of times I will work with a girl in therapy, girls in therapy, and I coach them to say something and they look at me and they say, I could never say that. They know themselves enough to know that they could never confront anyone. So you kind of need to like know the temperament and the personality of the child before you suggest solutions. But prior to that, just sort of basic education about friendship is important, because these girls and boys, frankly, too, they get blindsided by these kids who have been their friends since elementary school. And that once they hit, you know, pre-puberty or puberty, some of that behavior is so out of character that it really confuses the child, your child, or the child that's been victimized, so to speak. But to talk to your children constantly about friends, girls specifically, because they have this idea that all of their friends need to be their ride or die or their BFFs. And that is just not true. So we need to educate all kids, girls specifically, about, you know, there's three categories of friends. Like, everyone has utility friends. So a utility friend is someone that's like, hey, I'm not going to be in Spanish today. Can I borrow your notes? Or, hey, we're going out of town this weekend. Can you get our mail? Like, that's a utilitarian friendship. And those are important and valuable, and we all need those. Then you have your close friendships. And those are the ones that maybe you watch college football with, or you like to go antique shopping, or you got book club with, or something like that. Those are kind of your close friends. And then you have like your personal friends. And those are the ones that is like, if you get bad medical, some scary medical diagnoses or something, like that's the friend you're going to call, those friends. So these girls need to know that there's like three separate categories of friends, and all are important. But they think everyone needs to be in that third category of like the most important best friends of my life. And that's just not true. Like, friends are fluid. They're going to come and go in your life. But these girls need to think like not every person needs to be your best friend.
That's really good. Yeah. Actually, the other counselor I interviewed today, she said that too. Like, not having best friend expectations of associates. It's good for parents too. It's good all the time.
Totally. And then I think you referenced this a little bit earlier, but use a different word, I think, is like teaching kids that not every friend is 100% friend. Some friends are just what I call 50-50 friends. And that is like, you know, sometimes they're hot, sometimes they're cold. And yes, everyone has bad days and stuff, but if they are consistently inconsistent, we're going to throw them in the 50-50 category. But if there's a friend or two that is always happy to see you, always pleasant, always says hi, always makes sure you're included, that's a 100% friend. So on a day where you kind of get your feelings hurt, you need to kind of remind yourself, all right, was this a 50-50 friend or was this a 100% friend? If it's a 50-50% friend, then you can't let it affect you that much, because the track record with that person is inconsistent. So that probably speaks more about them than it does to you. So you kind of need to just let that one go. So, but if it's a 100% friend, that's the one that you can really rely on. And then you need to think about yourself. Are you a 50-50 friend to this person, or are you 100% friend? And each year that's going to change. And I, again, we do this in therapy too. This is one of the exercises, like, who's in your 50-50 list? Who's on your 100% list? And then it really helps these kids conceptualize when these things happen and there's fallout, like, what's the weight of this? Well, if they were in the 50-50 column, then I'm not going to let this affect me as much, because this is kind of how she rolls.
Okay, moms, if you have teenage girls, I'm sure they are taking you to get their own skincare and their makeup, and maybe it's time for you to do something for yourself. You've seen the online tutorials. You're maybe considering, how can I like up my makeup game? Well, let me connect you with my new favorite. It is the unicorn of online makeup options. I'm telling you, Thrive Cosmetics not only is 100% vegan and cruelty-free, so you don't have to worry about all those extra things that your body doesn't need, especially this time of our life, we need to keep it simple, but it also has high-performing trademarked products without compromising their standards. These things work. And bonus, every time you purchase a product, Thrive Cosmetics donates products and funds to help communities thrive. I love that. So let me tell you about one of my favorites. I talk about so many different things, but today I'm going to mention the gold standard Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara with over 40,000 five-star reviews and 5 different shades. For me, it lasts all day. No clumping, no smudging, no flaking. If I try other mascaras, it's just like I have dark rings under my eyes by the end of the day. Also, it looks like I have lash extensions, but I don't have the damaging glue or the salon prices or the time and energy. I love that they have this flake-free tubing formula. Yes, it's trademarked. So it basically creates tubes around each of your eyelashes. So not only does that make your lashes lengthen and defines them, it also has this nourishing ingredient that helps them grow stronger and healthier, and they don't break off when you take the mascara off because they just slide right off with warm water and a washcloth. No soap required. So stays on when you need it to, comes off easily when you need it to. So try your new trusty favorites with an exclusive set just for my listeners. New customers can get the Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara and a mini-sized Brilliant Eye Brightener, I love that stuff, at a special set price with free shipping available at thrivecosmetics.com/DMA. Or you could save more than 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/DMA. That's Thrive Cosmetics, and it's spelled CAUSEMETICS.com/DMA for 20% off your first order. Another thing moms of teens and kids we often neglect is our shapewear, our bra situation. I'm going to give you permission to spend some money on yourself, especially as spring is here, the sun is out, maybe you have some special parties to go to, whether it's graduation season for you, wedding season, bridal showers, whatever it is. I feel like I'm wearing dresses more, and I'm super thankful that Honey Love has created the perfect shapewear. What I love about them is they have this superpower short that has targeted compression technology. So it decides there's certain areas of your body that need more support and there's areas that need less. It's like an X on your body. So it sculpts your midsection without squeezing out your curves. It works with your body, not against it. Now, another aspect, I know this is a little tricky to talk about, but you know how hard it is when it's time to go to the bathroom and you have to take off the tight piece of shapewear in the bathroom line. Well, the Super Power Short has a 100% cotton gusset, so you just can open up in the middle with the little opening they have in the panty area for super easy bathroom use. No costume change required. And they're not just, like I said, about shapewear. I absolutely love their best-selling crossover bra. I wear it all the time. It's so comfortable. I forget I have it on, or I wear it under pajamas when we have teens hanging out over at the house, but I want to be comfortable. It's so great. Treat yourself, moms, to the most comfortable shapewear on earth. Save 20% off site-wide at honeylove.com/DMA. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/DMA. After you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in shapewear with Honeylove. Do you talk through with them? I know we were going to mention this, how friend groups shift throughout the years. So let's say this was an elementary friend and you get into middle school and like all of a sudden she's into makeup and TikToks and boys and you still want to do the things that you did in elementary school, or fast forward into high school, maybe around sophomore year, everyone's getting their license and they want to go and have the hard, fast parties and you just wanted to hang out around the fire pit and, you know, or watch Gilmore Girls. I mean, This mismatch of values that is normal but can be really hurt. It can hurt. And then it doubles down on pain if it's a mean girl who's like, what are you such a baby? Leave me alone. I'm a gush. Nobody does that anymore.
Totally. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, what are the normal friendship transitions that could help a mom whose child is kind of in that stage?
Yeah. So you're going to see it around like grade specific. I'm thinking like fourth, fifth, where some girls are still playing with their American Girl dolls. And some girls have moved on to like, I want to go to Sephora every weekend. So that's generally a shift. And then you mentioned the other one. So sophomore year high school is where we see the most fragmented friendships. And that's really just the introduction of driving. With the autonomy and freedom of driving comes the ability to make decisions that some kids want to make and other kids don't. That one is really hard to swallow. Because what happens with that one specifically is, let's say you've got two boys. Let's use boys for this one. Let's say you've got like Sam and Nick, right? And they've been best friends forever. And then they both start driving. Well, Sam decides he's going to go on the party route and Nick is going to not do that. Well, what happens is Sam turns on Nick. Nick doesn't turn on Sam, right? Sam turns on Nick because every time Sam sees Nick, he's reminded that Sam's making choices that Nick doesn't make. And that makes Sam feel bad. So it's best for Sam to just ignore Nick.
So Sam was the one who was doing the partying. He was like, whenever he sees Nick, it reminds him of this path he's on.
That's right.
And so he's actually the one who's unkind to Nick.
That's right. And Nick is like, I don't care that he's doing it. Like, I just want my friend back.
Yeah.
But that's
and can we hang out and not have that be a thing? Yeah.
And that's how that goes. So that's the biggest fragment that I see. And then around for girls specifically, it's around that pre-puberty jump from the level of, I just want to play and do girly things and bake cookies to, I want to do things about my appearance and about boys and about being seen and being out and things like that. That one is a little bit more of a spread. You know, sophomore year is very specifically about the driving and the new autonomy. But for the girls, that can spread anywhere from, gosh, third grade through sixth grade. So that one has a little bit longer just because that developmental phase is generally more open for girls.
Is there any connection to like childhood trauma or, I don't know, home situations that cause a girl to be a mean girl? Is this just some personalities are drawn to the power role? And because I can imagine a mom is trying to coach her daughter who's been canceled by the mean girl and be like, honey, we need to understand she's going through X, Y, and Z, and she's trying to bring empathy. Is that an appropriate conversation? Or do we just like not try to figure out why she's the mean girl?
Yeah, I wouldn't make excuses and say, because your daughter doesn't want to hear that. She just knows that she's been hurt and she wants you to be on her side. Oftentimes for mean girls, we see a lot of parentified children at home. I mean, a parentified child is someone who is often given more responsibilities than what is age appropriate for them. So they're used to the kind of being bossed to little siblings, or they have more responsibility than they perceive their peers to have, which in turn makes them parentified. And then they project that onto their friend group, meaning they call the shots, they decide who's in, who's out, they decide what the activity is, they make all the decisions because they do that in their home. So we see parentified children in homes that have alcohol or addiction issues, chronic illness, where a parent is unavailable to be the primary parent, so therefore it falls on a sibling. So we see that oftentimes with mean girls, that they're parentified at home.
Or, I mean, I have one out of four. That's just been his personality since he was two, to be the parent for us all, telling us what we're doing and how we're there's that layer. But I could see, I'm curious with how kids aren't given responsibilities. Like if you're talking about more an affluent home, so it's not that they're given more responsibilities, they're given more freedoms. Does that lead to a power play too? Like a lot of freedom without responsibility?
I have not seen that correlation.
Okay.
In any of this. It's more of a parentified child, modeled behavior by mom, some sort of perceived retaliation. Again, like if some girl decides that this other girl talked to someone she shouldn't have or talk to an ex-boyfriend of the girl. Like, you know, there's all these unspoken rules in these groups that to cut her from the group or to cancel her from the group is warranted because of some sort of retaliation or behavior that was deemed inappropriate. Yeah, just, and then, you know, there is narcissism is a personality disorder that is genetic. So yeah. Those things come through the DNA chain, and there's plenty of personality disorders out there that are going to show up in children. Not every mean girl has narcissistic personality disorder. However, there are a handful that do. So we can't just say it's hormones, it's developmental inconsistencies, it's parentification. Like, it is one of the factors that has to be considered.
How do we coach our sons who can sometimes get pulled into the drama of the mean girl, or maybe they're trying to stand up for the girl who's been canceled? Like, I feel like this isn't just a thing that girls deal with in these years. It impacts the whole group.
Right. For sure. Totally agree 100%. However, the mean girl culture is so like socially complex that boys are often used as pawns.
Yes.
So if we have a boy that feels like he is sticking up for a girl or is getting involved because he's going to right the wrong or smooth out the injustice of it, generally speaking, that turns on him. And he was engaged originally as a pawn anyway, so he could find himself in the crosshairs of the mean vibe that's going on in general. So it's best that boys stay out of it.
That's the advice my husband would give you with three sisters. He learned very quickly.
Yes.
Do not get in the middle, because they will all of a sudden then all be against you. That's what he said. They all turn on him.
Yes. The best advice is, I'm so sorry that's happening. Like, I'm here for you. Like, sort of neutral, generalized, buffered support.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's more complex than a boy gives it credit for.
Yeah, he's not going to fully understand
all the nuances.
And that's the thing with girls too, we didn't even mention, is the nuance.
Well, generally speaking, boys and definitely grown men are very solution focused. Like, problem, solution, problem, solution, problem, solution. So a lot of times these adolescent boys or even middle school boys hear the drama and they have a very quick solution and they share it. And the girls are like, well, you don't get it because, and then they, you know, spout off a litany of these nuances that go on inside of this power structure in this group. So it's not clear cut by any means. And then when parents get involved, we also want a quick solution. And sometimes these things just have to work themselves out. We also have to remember that what is a very heated issue amongst girls 6 months later is a non-issue, but the parents are still hot about it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's really hard too. So the parenting perspective there is how to let it go when it was a complete torpedo in your home. And you can't recalibrate yourself to accept these girls anymore after the pain and damage that they caused inside of your house and to your child. That's almost the bigger issue.
Yeah. And you can feel, I mean, I think that we can sometimes get attached to friends of our kids, and if they move on to a different group, it's like, wait, well, what about that group? I really liked those kids. You know, like, you get sad, and it's us dealing with our own stuff, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that goes back to like the value of the American child has gone up so high that their lives just feel so valuable to every member of the family. And that's new.
Any last word of advice when it comes to mean girls, managing, mothering mean girls?
I would say ask a lot more questions than you're probably asking. Don't assume because your child has a set friend group and plans every weekend that there's not politics and drama inside the friend group. So don't make any assumptions, but just ask a lot of questions and stay curious.
Yes. How do you handle, like, if you're asking the questions and they're like, stop asking me questions? Maybe that's just my kids.
Well, I would like to think they're not going to answer that every time. So it's also a matter of picking the right window to ask those questions when they're well rested and well fed and regulated and not stressed, and they're kind of being open to you. Maybe you're out running around. You can ask if throw out a few softballs about friends and see what they give you, and then kind of get a little traction there. Like most things in parenting, you're just waiting for your moment to have the right conversation.
Being available. That's what the teen years feel like. It's like two dinners. It's been Bruce and I sitting at the table, and I had a coloring book out with like markers, and I'm just coloring. And all of a sudden the teen is just like going on and on and on. And like the other siblings have left. What is happening? I just need to leave coloring books out on the table as an after dinner activity. Totally not something I'd planned, but.
You also probably weren't making eye contact.
Nope.
So it didn't feel like it was about to be an investigation of any sort.
Nope. Just a lot of free information. It was very helpful.
That's awesome. And he had just come off of dinner, so he was well fed. And his nervous system was regulated after having a meal. So that was good timing.
Didn't have to be anywhere. Not that I'm writing a tip book, anyone. Do not follow me for tips, but I'm just saying it was a shocker. It was a shocker. Well, Dr. Jameson, always a treat, always a pleasure. So many good nuggets in here. Y'all go follow. It's Dr. Kelly Jameson. We'll link to it in the show notes. If you want her to come talk to your group, be on your news. If you're in Dallas, you could come see her. But thank you for being with me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Having done episodes on friendship before, I know this is a tender topic. I was even talking to someone on our team who was sharing that they've been having several different issues with kids at schools and maybe having to switch schools and knowing how to coach your kids to walk through it and when to step in and when is it time to make a change. And so I'm going to pray over all of us because I feel like this does require a lot of discernment and navigating situation to situation. So Lord, we know we need people, but we also know that people can cause a lot of pain. And I pray over the parent who's listening, who is walking through something really hard right now with a friendship situation. I pray, Lord, that what Kelly shared would encourage them, that they're not alone, but also equip them. I pray, Lord, that they could come to you for supernatural insight and wisdom on what needs to be said and what doesn't. I pray for healing over hearts and souls of these tweens and teens who are just trying their best to find significance and belonging. And you've wired us for that, Lord. And I just pray that we would show each other grace as we navigate this tricky part of parenting. And I pray over moms that we could work through our own backstories of pain and hurt in the area of friendship so we wouldn't carry that into our kids' stories. I pray that we could find our identity and worth outside of our kids and their friendships so that we wouldn't cause unnecessary pain and harm to other people and other families. I pray that we would be tender when parents come to us with concerns and that we would receive them and listen with open hearts and that we could just work together as parents for the next generation's thriving and the next generation to be kingdom-minded and not pitting one against the other. And I pray all of this in your son's name. Thank you for Jesus. His death and resurrection reminds us that there is power, and in any circumstance in Christ, we can find peace. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. Thanks, y'all, for joining me. I will be back here next week. I'm going to check my little schedule here. We're going to laugh. Get to have a conversation with Melissa Radke. She has a new book called Chicken Fried Women. I'm looking forward to that. And I know this is Holy Week, and I hope that your family, whatever traditions you have, we've had lots over the years. I even have shared a post on Instagram with lots of different ideas of ways to commemorate and to make the gospel practical for your kids, the gift, the good news of the resurrection and what that means for us going forward. All right. Happy Easter. Happy Resurrection Day. See you back here next Monday. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.